Greetings and welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips-Weverson coming at you from here on the coast of Darwin, Northern Territory, Australia. It's the afternoon of Thursday, the 17th of September. Spot on the new moon today. And the spring equinox is coming up on the 22nd. And today also happens to be the birthday of one of my most loveliest friends. She's Australian but living on the South Island of New Zealand now. One of my very favorite artists and dearest friends, Kate Burness. And she has done this many beautiful paintings, but she has the Australian Tree of Life that to me is her masterpiece that she did back in the 1980s. But anyway, happy birthday, Kate. And this show, On the Brink number 336, it's called Whales of the Dreamtime, Inland Seas, Ancient Songlines, and Future Wisdom. And then I'm also going to go into the beginnings of what I'll probably dedicate a near future show to, about the whole concept of intelligence and what we mean by it, what it is, what it isn't, and the expression intelligent life, like, for example, looking for intelligent life in the universe, which is something that the astronomers and astrobiologists are always talking about, SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence and all that. But it begs the question, is there such a thing as unintelligent life? Very good question. I don't think so. I think if something's alive, it's innately and inherently intelligent. And that we, Homo sapiens, are really the only beings, the only life forms that can exist by demonstrating that we're not intelligent at all. This broadcast is dedicated to the really cool humpback whale. We think there's just one, but there could possibly be more than one, who about a week and a half ago, they traveled, three of them entered the mouth of the East Alligator River, which is sort of over near, it's in Kakadu National Park up here in the territory up on the northern coast. And these whales went a few kilometers inland up this river that, it's a very big river, very deep, and it's tidal up to about 90 kilometers inland. And anyway, all the tourism people and the park rangers and all the marine biologists were completely freaking out because they've never seen humpback whales in this area before, ever. Not in modern history. Doesn't mean they haven't been here even during this time, that they just weren't seen. But this was a very stunning and anomalous event. Well, anyway, after a day or so, they believed at least two of the humpback whales returned to the ocean. And then there's then a what seems like a solitary one continuing on a journey up the river. And today, I didn't see any new information posted about it today. But 2 days ago, the marine biologists, one of them's named Carol Palmer she's a cetacean expert with the Northern Territory. She said that the whale seemed to be fine, seemed to be in really good health, that he was in deep water where that part of the river was about 8 or 9 meters deep, and that even though that river has the highest density of crocodiles of anywhere in the world, they reckon that the whale was safe from the crocodiles because it is so big. This whale was 15 meters long, weighing probably about 40 tons. That the crocs wouldn't dare. They wouldn't know what to do with something that big. But what they were concerned about is that the whale could possibly become stranded on a sandbar, especially if the tide was going out. And then if it got stranded, and couldn't move, then it might become prey to the crocodiles. They might get an idea of attacking. And then if one drew blood, the whole lot of them would probably just descend on it. So we've really been praying and sending energy that that's not going to happen. So hopefully, what she said was 2 days ago was that probably today they were going to try to get in there and put a satellite tag on the whale if they can, so that they can monitor its movements, and that they were also going to attempt some acoustically based operations designed to try to either coax or scare the whale to turn around and to head back out to the mouth of the river and back into the ocean. And one of these was to, first they were going to try making like loud banging noises or broadcast sounds of noises. I'm not sure exactly what kind, but just sort of like maybe sort of cacophonous noises that hopefully wouldn't damage the whale's hearing, but that would, you know, scare them into turning around and stuff like that. And then the other one was to play, I think, underwater, with hydrophones underwater, play recordings of other humpback whales that might entice the whale to come and join his friends who weren't there. Then another thing I saw said that they might try to play recordings of orcas or killer whale sounds, which are sometimes known to be enemies of humpback whales. I think that most orcas aren't, but that my friend Howard Garrett, the orca authority who I've interviewed on the show at least once, said a few years ago that the majority of orcas are ones who eat only salmon, and that they had a very strict, he used the word taboo as if it was a cultural belief, that no matter how hungry they were, even if they were starving to death, they wouldn't go and kill anything else. I'm not sure if that applied to maybe other fish, but that they wouldn't go and eat seals, much less other cetaceans like the babies of whales or dolphins or anything like that. But that a minority of orcas, which they call the kind of the rogue ones, that they are kind of adventitious, and they might go and eat anything that they could get, whether it would be like a newly born baby dolphin or a baby whale or anything that was injured, or maybe a seal, or, I mean, you know, who knows what, an octopus, anything they could catch or get, a dog maybe, or a cat. So anyway, hopefully tomorrow we'll know more. My impression right now is that the whale is fine, but what I want to explore on this show is why he's there. And so the mainstream consensus among all the scientists and stuff is that it's lost. And I've tended to say he, but it may be a female, we just don't know. But so they're saying it's lost, and that they reckon that it's part of a group that was heading around down the west coast of Australia on their way to Antarctica for the summer to do their feeding of all the krill and stuff like that. And so they reckon he's lost. They took a wrong turn and headed up the mouth of the river. And so, I mean, you'd think that whales would know after a certain point. I mean, they knew it was a river, you know. Once you get up in there a certain amount, you can tell that you're not in the open ocean anymore. And so what they were thinking when they went in there to begin with, we have absolutely no idea. But that's what I want to explore in this show. And so, and especially if he's not lost, you know, that's kind of the mainstream conception. But what if he's not? What if that's wrong? What are the other options for what this whale might be doing and thinking, and what his purpose is? And another one of these humpback whale authorities said that they think of them as being explorers, that they kind of go, they like to go in new areas and uncharted territory, and with the implication being that may sometimes lead to extenuating circumstances where they might find themselves like a in this article, they were saying that, and I remember hearing about this in 1985, I think it was, this humpback whale kind of came into the San Francisco harbor and kind of got stuck there, and they named him Humphrey the humpback, and they used recorded whale sounds to inspire him to come back out to the ocean. And so that's why they thought that they would try that this time, because it worked before. So, but they reckoned that he might have just come in there just to say good day and to see what's going on, you know, if they're curious beings. So this ties in with the whole concept of intelligence, you know, what we mean by it. It's kind of this catch-all term that it tends to be what humans use if we want to distinguish between ourselves and all other life forms. Almost without exception, humans go like, oh, well, we're intelligent. We're the most intelligent of all the animals, of all the life forms. And I think that's kind of a joke, but, you know, if we look at the origins of the concept, you know, what is it? Of course, it describes how we think we're different. And we can easily do that, but most of it's not a good thing. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but won't go into that yet. So, if he's not lost, what are the other possibilities? So, if we think of him as an animal, which most people do, you know, a magnificent creature, a beautiful animal, still an animal though. But if we think of him as an animal, why or how would an animal get lost? So we tend to think of animals have their sixth sense of navigation, their ability to sort of find their way in ways that humans either can't, or our ability to do that has atrophied in general. Where, you know, some people still do have that kind of ability, like, you know, people that can just find their way, or, you know, indigenous people like the Australian indigenous people from here are known for their ability to find their way. And then you've got the ability, you know, to track other people, like my favorite Aboriginal actor David Gopala played the tracker, and so he's the face of Australia in terms of the Dreamtime ancestors. So if we think of the whale as an animal, why would he be lost? So maybe his magnetic navigation compass has become distorted. Maybe he's got an inner ear parasite or a headache, or maybe it's because the Earth's magnetic fields are shifting, or that kind of thing. Or, you know, maybe something's wrong with him that's causing him to think that he might be going to Antarctica. And he is headed the right direction. He's headed due south down the river, which is the direct way to Antarctica. So that could be, if we think of him as an animal. If we think of him as a person, like a being on the level of people that's got lost somehow, how would that work? And we go like, well, theoretically it would be the same, just at sort of like a different level. His ability to, maybe his map was wrong, or the ancient song line has shifted or something like that. There's no way to know. Then if we think of him as an extraterrestrial intelligence, what might he be doing? You know, so if he was an animal sort of going in what looks like the wrong direction, we assume they're lost. But if it's a person going what seems to be the wrong direction, then we consider that there may be a purposive element, that if he's not lost, he might be doing it on purpose. But then why would that be? So we talked about how that the humpback whales might be explorers. He might be, you know, as an animal, he could be going in search of a mate. Maybe he's got a memory of whales that went up that way before. Maybe there's he's responding to some kind of a call or a beacon of some kind that could be energetic, it could be acoustic, it could be optical, it could be metaphysical. All these different possibilities. And so he could be heeding a mystical call. He could be on what the indigenous people call a walkabout, like a sacred journey into the nether recesses of the dream time. And if we think of them as extraterrestrial intelligence, which they truly are, in the sense of extraterrestrial meaning away from land, then he could really be on some kind of mission. And in my mind, I'm going like, well, what if, because the whales are, in the metaphysical circle, the whales are believed to be kind of like the record keepers of ancient knowledge and wisdom. And not just in the sense of, or even at all in the sense of what humans think of as knowledge and wisdom, but in terms of true broadband knowledge and wisdom, in terms of knowledge and wisdom that would apply to all the beings of the earth that have ever existed, all the kingdoms of life, all the dimensions of consciousness, and a true memory or record of everything that has really happened on the earth and in the heliocosm and with life here, not our distorted perception of it from the human mind, but the actual reality itself, the sort of morphogenetic echo or imprint of everything that has happened. I think that that's what the whales and the dolphins and the cetaceans in general are able to access. So, going on that, maybe this whale is returning to a place where, not all that long ago, maybe even hundreds of years ago, that whale dreaming clans of people were gathered with them at a certain place, maybe a lagoon or a little bay inland up the Alligator River, where they would have what they call corroboree, sort of like a gathering of the whales and the people and maybe other kingdoms of life. And maybe this was a regular occurrence, and maybe this is the first time, maybe this is something that only happened every so often due to different kind of cosmic alignments or, you know, syzygies or oppositions or all different kind of presences of this and that might only occur every few dozen or hundreds or even thousands of years. And so maybe this is the time coming up when they would traditionally have that gathering, and he's one of the few. Maybe he's been sent to be the representative of the whales for the people, and all the rest of the whales are going to Antarctica like they always used to do. I mean, you know, we could speculate endlessly about all this stuff, but I think it's very interesting, you know, like, if he's not lost, what is he doing? You know, and so we go like, well, is he just going to keep going further and further and further? Because it seemed like, from what they were saying, that he reached a point approximately 30 kilometers inland and was kind of staying there. So if we get more information tomorrow, it'll be interesting to see if he's still there, if he hasn't tried to progress further up the river, you know, assuming that they didn't deliberately try to keep him from doing so, because he was only 30 kilometers, and if it's tidal up to 90, that meant he probably can safely go a few more tens of kilometers without the water getting too shallow, you know, depending on how much it varies between high and low tide. So that's a very interesting thing to think about. But it made me realize some of the stories I've heard about whales and songlines and stuff here in Australia. Like, I heard from some Aboriginal people a few years ago that there was songlines running from the East Coast, like around Byron Bay, over to Uluru. I think this was Gabby Duncan, the Dark and Junk Whale Dreaming Elder, who told me this, and that there's dreaming sites related to whales at Uluru, which is in the central desert, thousands of kilometers from the ocean, and that some of these song lines from the east coast to the central desert, back in the day, they were traversed in boats because there was time when the sea level was much higher than it is now, which is evidenced by layers of fossils that are like hundreds, if not 1,000 meters above the existing sea level, like in the Gammon Ranges, and down in the Flinders Ranges in South Australia, where I'll be in a few weeks. And so they traversed these song lines in boats, and so that some of the islands they would stop at, some of the sacred points, like in the Warrumbungles and Mount Kapitar, and a few other peaks like that, that are kind of the cores of ancient volcanoes, they're mountains sticking up now, but back then, they would have been islands. They would have been the islands where people could stop at and maybe do ceremony and stuff. And being volcanoes, they would be very powerful. So this is all very interesting, but so the memory and the consciousness of the whales, I think, has a continuity going back in time to this kind of epochs that seem very, very distant to us, but to them, it may not seem all that long ago. Because possibly their psyche and their mental orientation, their whole operating environment of their mind hasn't degenerated or mutated in the same way that ours has since the dawn of civilization. That's another whole interesting thing to think about. If are humans the only beings that are affected by the galactic seasons called the yugas? Very, very interesting. So the sea level has varied a lot in Australia, and it may be cyclical, it may be random, but we do have evidence that it's been a lot higher than it is now. And I don't know, it would be hard to know much about evidence of it being lower, because to see that evidence, it would need to be lower than it is now, and we'd be looking for fossils and stuff that's currently underwater. So that makes it trickier. But I've also heard stories of there being giant sea caves. I think Bunalari, the Murning Whale Dreaming Elder, told me that there's caves in South Australia down coming up one of them, maybe next to the Eyre Peninsula up in there, or maybe over towards, going over towards the Great Australian Bight, that there's caves that are like 68 or 100 kilometers inland that whales could come up inside there. And then my friend Sean McCarthy on Great Barrier Island said that he's been in some caves like that in Western Australia, and that, and my friend Wambi, the Aboriginal elder who I rode with from Alice Springs to Adelaide a couple of years ago, he said that there's a place in Western Australia, sort of a few hours north of Kalgoorlie, maybe up near Wiluna, sort of up in there, where there was a giant sea cave that he knew an elder that went there, and he went down in this giant cave, and even though it was so dark he couldn't see anything, he could hear the lapping of water, and it smelled like seawater. And so this was more than 1,000 km inland in Western Australia. So, and my friend Cara Tupley from Alice Springs said that indigenous friends of hers told her there were stories about how there was water holes in the central desert where whales would come up and breach in these water holes. And so I don't know how much credibility we can give to that, but it's not impossible. I mean, if you think of how the vast underwater systems that are known, which I guess you could probably, to call it an underground ocean may be misleading, but there's the Great Artesian Basin that's chambers filled with water that probably covers about a fifth of all of Australia. And then there's several other basins that aren't quite so big, but in different areas, like down in South Australia and in the Kimberley and up north. And so I'm not sure exactly what the internal structures of these basins is like, or how much is known about it. I don't know if it would be if each basin was one giant cavity, you know, with nothing blocking it off, no walls or anything. It was one big giant cavity that you could just swim freely within. And then would there be pockets of air up above, down in there, even though it might be totally dark? And if there's passageways that connect sort of underground water-filled tunnels that might go from basin to basin. But what if it was possible for a whale who could either find his way or knew his way through different means, that could travel going in from the ocean and go into some of these sea caves and know or find his way through the Great Artesian Basin water and go up through the Central Desert and then come out up at the Alligator River in Kakadu, or vice versa? You know, what if this humpback whale is trying to proceed to a point where he knows where there should be or used to be an opening of some kind, where the Alligator River might be fed by springs that come from these subterranean basins? And there he was going to go in and try to go on a mission down into the Central Desert or something like that. And so they would probably know or be able to find where there's pockets of air that would need to be located not very far apart, because I don't know how long humpback whales can hold their breath for. I know sperm whales can hold their breath for over an hour. And so I don't know if that includes an hour of swimming or just sort of chilling out. But anyway, all this is very, very, very interesting to think about when trying to get inside the mentality of the whales and dolphins, and so what kind of things they actually do. Like, everything they do, the majority of what they do is under the water and far away from us, and so we just don't really know. And we sort of know a bit about what we see, and it's mostly speculation. So what if he's not lost, but he's on a mission that might take him? And again, another thing is, it's also possible that there could have been times in the past and maybe in the future when the water level of the oceans might rise enough that the rivers might connect. There could be a system of rivers where he could travel on the surface all the way from the Alligator River down through the Central Desert and come out down at Adelaide or something like that, and then head on to Antarctica. And I was looking at a map of the river systems of Australia to see how something like that might happen. And because it would be based on kind of like the way that the topography of the land actually is now. And then I started seeing maps of what they believe used to be an inland sea here in Australia. And, you know, you can look at, there's Lake Eyre, which gets pretty big. But this sea was way, way, way bigger than that. And, you know, how much the sea level would have to rise in order to create that. And I don't know, it's all very interesting. And then you've got the concept of the ancient land bridge that connects Wilson's Prom with Tasmania and Flinders Island, like Mount Killiecrankie, Mount Strzelecki, Mount Monroe on Clark Island, Cape Barron Island. These were the peaks on the land bridge. And so Bass Strait is not very deep. And so if the ocean level dropped, I think only about 60 or 80 meters, then you'd be able to walk all the way from Wilson's Prom to Tasmania, and you'd come out, you'd hit the mainland of Tasmania up at the far northeast corner at Mount William, which is the very, very beautiful sacred place that I've been lucky enough to be at for the spring equinox last year, and for the autumn equinox in March, and for the winter solstice and Jen. I was lucky enough to be at Mount William. Such a very powerful place. And it's kind of like it would be a very sacred songline nexus, because that would be where the land bridge connected with Tasmania. So this is pure speculation, but for example, right now, we've got the planet Mars, which is very, very bright in the sky, rising in the mid-evening. And it's going to be at opposition on the 13th of October, and it's going to be at perigee, or its closest approach to the Earth, on the 6th of October. So it's going to be very, very, very bright, brighter than anything in the sky except for the Sun and the Moon, and probably maybe even brighter than Venus, which is in the morning now. So what if this journey of this whale has something to do with Mars, something to do with the song lines that he might be traveling, or that he's trying to reestablish or reconnect, or with the timing of the corroboree that he's seeking the place where that used to happen? Or, I mean, for all we know, there could be clans of whale dreaming people now still able to remember and follow the old ways. And what if he's going to be with them? What if he's actually with them right now and we just don't know? I mean, you know, I hold out for the possibility of stuff like that to happen in the world, because Australia is huge and it's vast, and there's a lot of people here. The indigenous culture is still very alive and well, especially up here in the top end, and once you get over into Arnhem Land. So it's very, very, very interesting. Very interesting. Maybe he's gathering information by swimming in the currents of this river. Because, you know, when you've got the incoming tide, you've got the water from the ocean coming in against the outgoing current of the fresh water coming from wherever the headwaters of the alligator are. Now, that would be very interesting to see where the water in that river is actually coming from. It's probably several tributaries that form, but it'd be interesting to see how far inland this water is coming from, what different places, and if it's coming from, for example, mountaintops or bodies of water or underground aquifers, springs, or something like that. So maybe his mission has to do with testing the quality of the water that's coming into the river, and he can glean or discern all kinds of really amazing cosmic information about what's happening in the heliocosm from the quality of this water that might tell about what's happening in different parts of Australia. I mean, you know, the sky is the limit, but the whales are the masters of sound, and they're the masters of being connected with water, because they live in the ocean, which is really one giant macro molecule of water, which functions as one giant supercrystal. So it's like one molecule and one crystal of the most special, amazing substance that is really very close to being synonymous with life. Like, you could almost say that water is life, and that's what Glenn Edney said, that Russian guy, Vernadsky, said, that life is animated water. So how cool is all this? Anyway, I'm hoping to find out more tomorrow. So I think the whales are highly aware. I don't necessarily buy the belief that this guy's lost, and we may never know. But there may be way, like I've been trying to dial into his consciousness the whole time, and it was really interesting. Like, week before last, I broke out this little pendant that I've got that's got a rainbow whale called Paikia Aniwaniwa. I wore that for the very first time, just around the same time that these whales came. And so that's another kind of a little small synchronicity, but I do feel a connection with them. And I've even offered in my mind to go over there with my flute and play some flute for these whales. no matter what this will is doing, though, I think it's safe to assume that it is not unintelligent behavior. And the whales and dolphins may, and all of life, and Lauren Isley talked about this, they may not have to be self-aware to be highly intelligent. Like we laud ourselves on our self-awareness, like to an extreme, like we're aware of that we're doing everything. But it's possible to actually live and be and do everything without necessarily being aware that you're doing it. And then sometimes being aware that you're doing stuff can actually get in the way of doing it. So this is a very interesting area for speculation, but it could be that they've never developed the habit of wasting energy on being too self-aware. They just kind of like, they don't sit around thinking about themselves. They're just out there doing, exploring, and making sounds and singing, glorifying the beauty of creation and maintaining the ancient connections with water-based life and other planets, and maybe dialing into the morphogenetic consciousness fields of the Goldian microbes that live down in the subsurface of the Earth, and navigating the magnetotelluric song lines that traverse both the body of Mother Earth and Mother Ocean and connect with the magnetic fields of the Earth and all the planets and the stars and galaxies, and singing and listening to the music of the spheres. I think this is what the whales and dolphins do. And so, maybe I can create a new painting that'll show my impression of what this whale is doing and experiencing. Ah, that's a very good idea. Anyway, this is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing out from here in Darwin. The Te Aua, the sunshine is about to come out and go down. And I'm going to go have a swim in the ocean and play my flute. And I hope that we're able to prevent Operation Frankenseed from transpiring. I can't imagine a worse nightmare scenario for humans to create. Sending love and light. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be happy. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. Good day. Good day. Thank you.